talk today because the retreat hasn't ended yet. There's over a day and a half left. There's plenty of time. As I keep on saying, there's about 30 hours of retreat left. That is 1,800 minutes, which is, yes, about 10,000 seconds. And 10,000 seconds is 10,000 opportunities to get jhana. That's all it takes. Just pressing the letting go button, and then you go into these deep meditations. And you get great insights as well, so there's lots of time left. So don't worry if you've got nowhere. Because if you've got nowhere on this retreat, you are the best meditator. Remember what I said? The job is not to get places, but to be where you already are. In fact, recently, both in Nolamara and also in Singapore, I was telling people, look, if you're not very good at your meditation here, and you haven't got anywhere, you are the best Buddhist of all. All those other ones who are trying to attain things and get things and compare themselves with others, they are just the selfish, conceited ones. But you decide not to get enlightened in this lifetime, not to get jhanas, so you don't embarrass other people, so you can stick around for the happiness and well-being of all beings for many more lifetimes. You are the Bodhisattva. And at the end of this retreat, we'll give the Bodhisattva prize to the most stupid meditator, the one who's deliberately sacrificed their peace, their bliss, so they don't have to get enlightened this retreat. And there's many of you who are vying for the Bodhisattva prize. But I want to carry on with just that's actually an interesting point, that just doesn't matter what you're experiencing. Stop judging yourself. Stop comparing yourself. Stop thinking, oh, only one day to go and I haven't got anything. It's just worse than last year. I go backwards in this meditation. Rah, rah, rah. That type of mind is the reason why you don't get anywhere in meditation. It's just the way you look at these things. So number one, I wasn't going to say this, but here we go. Number one is learn how not to judge. It's a beautiful way of letting go. It's one of those ways of letting go I haven't really talked about. And the story from where this arose to give you an idea of how you get some sort of angle, some insight, and you sort of elaborate it, and it makes very, very powerful methods for meditation. And what happened once, they knew I was a physicist. I think this was at Nolamara. And I don't know why they asked this question, but they asked, what do you think of this physicist Lord Kelvin's comment that the only way that we can control nature is to learn how to measure her accurately first? Which was one of the sayings of this great initiator of modern technology. You know, in about 200 or 300 years ago, he's the head of the Royal Society in London, a great scientist and also philosopher, Lord Kelvin. And he was at the start of what we call the Industrial Revolution technology, and realized if you are going to control nature, have air cons, have roofs and be well engineered so they don't fall in, to have boats and aircraft, to start technology, you have to have very accurate measurements, first of all. And so those of you who know the history of science, one of the first tasks was to be able to have standard lengths to measure distance and standard weights to measure sort of mass and standard clocks to measure time. And once they got all that stuff out of the way, then the rest of technology became quite easy. But when they said that, which was a very profound little statement, you have got to measure first before you can control. Now, being rebellious, and you always get insight when you're rebellious, when you see things the other way around. You don't see the way everyone else is going, you see in another direction. That's called insight. And so I looked at it the opposite way around, and the opposite way around was, well, what happens if you stop measuring things? And then you find you can't control. It's a wonderful insight. When I stop measuring time, you can't control your schedule anymore. Just the days and the nights, they just flow past. Morning, afternoon, evening, there's no real essential difference. It's just now. So when you stop measuring time, by today, tomorrow, how many days are left, how many minutes are left, how many seconds are left, how old you are, how many more years you've got to live, how many more years have gone past. When you stop measuring time, you can't control it anymore. And when you don't control it, you find this great sense of freedom. When you don't measure the person you live with, you don't judge them, then you don't tend to control them. You can't control them anymore. You just don't know who they are. You let them be, you let them evolve. When you don't judge yourself, at last you don't control yourself anymore. You don't know whether your meditation is good or bad. And this reminded me of one of the greatest little pieces of advice I got from my very first meditation teacher. It's one of these pieces of advice you should all keep in mind, especially at this time of the retreat. There's no such thing as a bad meditation, he said. There's no such thing as a bad meditation, no such thing as a good meditation either. It's just meditation, that's all. Very, very profound. Because in this retreat, I'm sure you've had meditation, you said, oh, that was really good. And you've had meditation, that was awful, that was bad. And that's the problem of your meditation. Judging it, because if it's a good meditation, it can always be better. It gives you lots of business to do. If it's a bad meditation, you've got to get your act together, it's only a few days to go. Either way, judging leads to more business, less peace, less contentment, less sense of freedom. So isn't it wonderful not to judge? It was just meditation, that's all. And that of course brings me to one of my popular stories, which is also apt at this particular time. Again, these are stories. Now, somebody asked me the other day, where do I get all my stories from? I think it was in Indonesia, because there's three books of stories I've got there now. And I got them from the internet, and they asked me, you know, did you invent all of those? Or, you know, did you hear them from somewhere else? And some of them I invented, some of them I sort of heard from somewhere else and adapted, you know, some of them from your teacher. You know, but some of them are sort of ones which I invented. But this is one of the ones which I invented, because people were asking just why is it that sometimes that I get good meditation, other times bad meditation? They're judging again. And to stop them judging good and bad and making themselves all depressed or making themselves all proud and arrogant, you know, I've got jhanas, not like those other guys. You see those other guys in the morning? They were just sleeping and leaning over and just, they're not real meditators, not like me. All that conceit business really sucks. But people get into it. So sometimes they ask me, Kajambam, can't we have a meditation retreat for real meditators? Not that these people who just come in for 5 minutes and go out for 5 minutes and making all this noise. Can't we have like an elite meditation retreat? You know, you've got to have at least a nimitta confirmed by Ajahn Brahm before you can come on the elite retreat. No way. But what happens, the simile was a simile of the man who goes to work on a Monday morning. And he works so hard on this construction site. And at the end of the day, he goes home. And his wife said, how much did you earn? He said, nothing, I didn't get paid anything, not a cent. And he goes to work the next day, hoping that life will be better. And again, working all day, he doesn't get paid. And he gets a bit dispirited, but, you know, he goes again on Wednesday, nothing else to do. And the same thing happens. 3 days of work, doesn't get any pay at all. And on Thursday, decides it's not worth going to work. Why do you work that hard? You don't get paid. But his wife cajoled him. Go off, go to work. So he went anyway. And again, the same thing happened. 4 days in a row, he didn't get any paycheck. And it was only because, you know, that Friday was just, you know, not such a long day. They knocked off early. He went to work on Friday. And of course on Friday, the boss gave him a big packet of money. And when he went home, he said, darling, I got paid on Friday. From now on, I'm only going to work on Fridays. Now you understand that, don't you? Because sometimes I'm only going to meditate when I get good meditation. And that's not how it works. All those times you sit here and struggle. All the times you sit here and fall asleep. All the times you sit here and think of the stock market or whatever else you think about. Whatever it is, that is still meditation. And then, sooner or later, you press the letting go button. and the boss gives you the paycheck. And you think every meditation must be like that. Of course, you can't just go to work on Friday and get paid for the whole week. On Friday you get paid for all those days you worked and got nothing. On the meditation payday, that's when you cash in your chips. When you get the big reward for all those other times you've meditated and struggled. Yeah, this is called meditation karma. You're building up the steam, building up the momentum so you can really get into some nice meditation. And it's weird sometimes. Sometimes you think you're getting somewhere and it doesn't work. Doesn't matter, keep on going, you're working. You know the paycheck is going to come. And sometimes it comes at the most unexpected times. And in fact, the paycheck always comes at the unexpected times. The times you don't really think that anything is going to happen. And the reason is, again, because expectation is one of the great hindrances of meditation. If you think it's going to happen, it never does. And the reason is because if you think it's going to happen, you're always waiting in the future. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And you watch for things which are coming rather than watching for things which are already here. You're looking in the wrong spot. The guy with the paycheck is standing right in front of you. But you're looking to the left, to the right, in the future or the past. You never see the paycheck when it arrives. So that's one of the first pieces of advice to you. Please, the postman is having a delivery today. Make sure you're here when the postman arrives. Because if you're somewhere else, thinking of the past, worrying about the future, when the postman arrives with your paycheck, you won't be here. You won't be at home in the present moment to receive it. So your job is to stay at home in the present moment, and soon the paycheck will arrive. Strange but true. So many times people have said, I never expected it would happen. This morning I was tired. This morning I got up late. This morning I had tummy ache or whatever it is. And something happened. That's why you never know when the paycheck is coming. That's why life is very, very weird, especially in meditation. But you can help it out by one of I was going to talk more about insight this morning. Again, insight, because that's an important part. One of the great places where insight arises is the contemplation of the weird. So this morning I'm going to talk about weird stuff. Because I like weird stuff. Because as a monk, life is pretty boring. You know, you don't sort of watch the TV, you don't watch movies, you don't have exciting stuff to do as a monk. It's one of the most boring things in the world, so people think. But there's lots of weird stuff which happens when you live your life as a meditating monk. And it's in that weird stuff you get some really great insights. Because when you always see things in the same way, when it's always the same stuff of the lay life, you don't get that different angle. So it's the weird stuff of meditation which really starts to make you see things in a different way. Because the weird stuff challenges your views and the way you think life is. And when things start to go strange, that is where you know that insight is beginning to happen. You're seeing things in a new way, in a different way. And this is one of those stages of meditation. I've been talking to a few people during their interviews, and I want to share it with each one of you right now. Because sometimes in meditation, your mind does get very strange and very weird. You start to see things which you shouldn't really see. For example, simple things. One of the first times this started to happen to me when I was meditating in Thailand, getting some very nice meditation. Because when you get very nice meditation, your mind gets powerful and very weird. You know, people like to hear weird things. And it's a simple thing, first of all. I was walking past the well where the monks would do their bathing and washing. And I saw on a line a towel hung out to dry. But that towel was black in color, jet black. And I stopped because I've never seen a black towel before. Even in the shops where you go shopping, have you ever managed to get a black towel as a present? Pink, red, yellow, blue, but never black. If you want to start a new designer line of towels, try a black towel. It's very efficient. It doesn't need to be washed so often. But this was perfectly black, and this was about 35 years ago. And I thought, this is weird, this is strange, they don't have things like black towels. What's going on? So again, I stopped and stared for about 2 minutes, just checking myself. And after about 2 minutes of staring, about that long, then the towel changed back to white. I thought, what's going on? Am I going crazy? Have people been putting some magic mushrooms into the curry? What is happening? And it wasn't magic mushrooms. I realized later on, and I read about this in some of the suttas, that this is what happens when your meditation gets strong and you allow your perception to become free. It starts playing around. It starts to see things in where you're not allowed to see things. To see a white towel as black. That's not allowed, but that's what happened. Or like another time when I was looking at a wall, I mentioned this to a few people in interviews. I was looking at this brick wall, and then before my eyes, it started to melt. Just like chocolate on a hot day, it started to drip down and become all gooey. This was a brick wall. That was weird. And it soon stopped and came back to as a brick wall again. And it was what it was, as I call this, that stage in meditation where your perception starts to gain its wings and become free. And you know you need to do that to gain insight. The reason is because otherwise you train your wisdom, the way you look at things, you're so conditioned in the way you look at things, you can't see things in a different way. The mind needs to be a bit playful to see things in a different way, which is one of the reasons why I introduced playfulness into this retreat. Always did. I was taught that at science. People in Cambridge taught me, look, if you want to do research, learn how to play. Play with the experiment, play with the equipment. See what happens. You might sort of blow up a few things, but you may also develop and discover a new part of science. Because in playfulness, we're exploring. We're trying to see things in a different way, in a new way. And that is actually what happens with meditation. Your perception becomes free enough to see things in a totally different way. Not what you expected, not what you're taught to see, but in a new way, in a fresh way. And because we're so conditioned to see things in a certain way by our culture, so brainwashed, so our will and our perceptions are just so controlled by our past, it's very difficult to get enlightened and see the Dhamma, to see things in a new way. It's very difficult to be innovative and just to get new ideas. And so this type of meditation is brilliant. If you're in research and development, if you have an idea, a company, a business which wants to see things in a new way, this is a brilliant meditation. Allow your perception to be so free, it can see walls vanish. It can see weird stuff. And allow that weird stuff to happen. Why is it when that starts to happen, people get freaked out? Because you go beyond your comfort zone. It's not really what you're supposed to see. You have to go against all of that conditioning. I remember Ajahn Chah's famous story when he was meditating once, how he experienced his perception take wings and do weird things, was he experienced his body explode. And he talked about that. He was meditating and then suddenly his body exploded and his liver was on one branch of a tree, because this was in the jungle. His heart was on another branch of a tree. His intestines were just hanging off another sort of twig. His body was all over the place, scattered on these trees like it had suddenly exploded. And of course, his body never exploded. No, he was there afterwards. But this was this perception which was happening. His mind was becoming free and expressing the truth in innovative and new ways which had never been done before. And you know, after that, many monks, they tried to do the same. They tried to also have their body explode. Just like a Buddhist suicide bomber. But they couldn't do this because this was just Ajahn Chah, the way his mind just played around with his perceptions, could see things in a different way. And that sometimes happens to you in small ways. Sometimes, you know, you're meditating here and you feel your body expand. That's very common in these retreats. Sometimes people tell me they're sitting here and their body gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. What the hell's going on? And all that is your perception is starting to play around and experience things in new ways, in ways you're not really allowed to. In other words, ways which are original and free. Sometimes people think they're floating up into the air or sinking into the ground. Now this happens to many people. One of the common perceptions, which is, you know, it really is strange because it's so simple. Many times people are sitting here and they say that they're nodding. They say they can't stop nodding when they're meditating. And I remember years ago, there was one woman, he said, look, this is my biggest problem, I'm nodding. And I said, look, no, sometimes I get up before you, and sometimes I come in here and you're already meditating. I've never seen you nod. She said, oh, but I do nod. So I said, okay, next time I'm going to check you out. You go meditate and I'll keep opening my eyes during my meditation. I'll sacrifice my meditation just to check you out. And when I did look at this lady, she was perfectly still. Perfectly still, not nodding at all. So I said afterwards, look, I looked at you many times, you know, the last half an hour. You're perfectly still. No, I wasn't. I was nodding. I looked at you, you were perfectly still, but it couldn't be, I knew I was nodding. And I threatened to take a video of her to prove it. But the point was, to her, it appeared. Her perception was that she was nodding, but she was perfectly still. All that is your perception. Just being free and playing games. Playing around, thinking you're nodding, but you're perfectly straight. Sometimes people think they're leaning backwards, they're not. So be really careful. Know that this actually happens. Your perception can do amazing things at this stage of meditation. Of course, that perception eventually turns into nimittas, where you actually see beautiful things. That's really all it is, a beginning of nimitta stage of meditation, just when your mind can be free. But that's also very important because it also is part of the insight practice. It teaches you the way you look at things is very limited. And there's 100 more ways to look at life than the one which you have right now. And sometimes the way you look at life when it's so restricted, so conditioned, not allowed to look at things in another way, blocks insight. That's why really good monks are always rebellious. Good teachers will not confirm what you know, but say, turn it around and see it in a totally different way. And that's why that some of the teachings were profound, because they were so totally counterintuitive. The sorts of things you could not see if you just followed the old course of action and just read the books and followed the theory. Little things like one of Ajahn Chah's greatest teachings, which I heard the first year, and I've repeated this many times because it is not in any book. It's a shame it's not in any book, and I promised to put it in a book one day, but I haven't yet, so one day I will, because no one else has recorded this, but he said it so many times in my first year, 38 years ago. That was a simile of his monastery, Wat Pa Phong, being the mango orchard. It's a mango orchard simile. He said his monastery was a mango orchard, and all those mangoes had been planted by the Buddha. So straight away I knew, hang on, no, he's telling a metaphor, one of his great sort of similes. Because there were no mango trees in that monastery, it was a forest, it was a jungle. And if there were, they were not planted by the Buddha, that was 2,500 years ago. And for the best will in the world, in respect to Thailand, the Buddha has never been to Thailand or Sri Lanka. And people say, no, 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 he went to Sri Lanka, he's got his footprint on Adam's Peak. Yeah. But I get into trouble by sort of going against culture and tradition. But you've got to be rational, otherwise, you know, people lose it. So, he said, those trees were planted by the Buddha, and now they're mature. And he said, those trees have got so many mangoes on them, and they're dripping with mangoes, and they're all ripe and incredibly juicy. And he said, "You monks are so lucky. You're so fortunate. Because of the great wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, you don't need to climb the tree to get a mango. You don't need to shake the tree to get the mango to fall. And worst of all, you don't have to throw a stick up to get the mango. Those are the usual ways you get mangoes from the tree. All you need to do, monks, is to sit down under the mango tree, quietly, still, and just hold your hand out, and the mango will fall." And at the time, I thought that was the most ridiculous simile I've ever heard. Because, you know, I've been in Asia. I know mango trees. If you sit under a mango tree, do you think it will fall? Maybe on your head, but never into your hand. And I thought, that's weird, that's strange. And of course, that was because my perception couldn't see such things at the time. That was weird, that was strange. That was the sort of thing you filed away under the sort of the idiot box teachings of great masters. But then later on, when you sort of grew in your meditation, started to understand what was really going on, wow, just how profound that was. Because for years I've been trying to climb the mango tree with effort, really trying to get my meditation together. For years I've been throwing sticks up, trying to get insight to fall, trying to make it happen. I'm going to really contemplate impermanence, I'm going to really contemplate. That's actually throwing sticks up. Even try to shake it. Come on, we're going to do it. Only a day to go. Come on, shake the mango tree. Let's make one fall. And it never fell. And I realized that that's not the way to make the mangoes of nimittas, jhanas, insight, enlightenment fall. In the great teachings of Ajahn Chah, pull out your hand and be still. And the mango falls right into the center. And my goodness, it's juicy and sweet. That is such a beautiful, perfect simile of actually how all these wonderful states of meditation, how insight and how enlightenment actually work. Beautiful simile. But I couldn't perceive that before because my mind was trained to see things in a certain way. I just couldn't understand it. Only later on you say, wow, that's so true. That is what sort of insight is. Your perception actually changes and sees things which you're really blind to before. And afterwards, it's how was it I couldn't see that before? And it's obvious because, you know, your perception wasn't free enough. It was just totally blinkered and couldn't see those beautiful teachings. But later on, you do. And you think, wow, that really is profound. So all of you, if you haven't experienced deep meditation or insight or enlightenment yet, it's because you've been doing one of those three things. You've been shaking the mango tree. Or you've been climbing up it. Many have been climbing up the wall or the mango tree or something. Or you've been throwing things up there, trying to get them to come down. That's not how it works. You be perfectly still. And then perception starts to be free and starts to experience some wonderful things. There's another thing about perception I wanted to bring up in this last talk. There's another talk tomorrow, obviously, but that'll be collecting everything together. There's another thing which is weird which happens in meditation. And it sort of started off with, I would meditate. Even now, I'm getting old, so I've got achy knees and achy backs and achy this and achy that. It's just part of getting old. But I would meditate for maybe 45 minutes or an hour, and afterwards you'd always be a bit stiff. But sometimes we get into really nice meditations, really deep meditation. You know, it's peaceful meditation where you sit for 2, 3, 4 hours. Now, without any effort, you don't sort of say, right, I'm going to beat the Guinness Book of Records. For those of you who want to beat the Guinness Book of Records for meditating, who can sit the longest without moving, always remember Ajahn Chah's, another great simile. He used to say that if you think that sitting long periods of time was the essential cause to become enlightened, and so the only reason you haven't got jhanas or enlightenment because you don't sit long enough and you have to train yourself to sit for at least 2 hours without moving. If you think that that's important, then that would mean that all the chickens in the world would be enlightened by now. Because chickens sit on the eggs, not just for 1 hour and then change their posture and go and have a cup of tea. Chickens, when they sit on their eggs, they sit on there for days without moving. So if they could sit so still, they sit still much longer than you do, then all the chickens will be enlightened in the world. And that was Ajahn Chah's like chicken meditation. So those of you who are only meditating to beat your record, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, then you are chicken meditators. Please remember that. And what happens to the chickens? They get enlightened, now they just get sore bottoms. But when those things happen naturally, and you know, you're just sitting down there and you're just going to the deep states of meditation, you come out afterwards and 4 or 5 hours have passed, the weird thing is your body is perfectly relaxed. And not a pain in the body, not an ache. And you haven't moved for five hours or something. And for me, when that happened, that was really weird. How come in an hour, you know, my legs start to really hurt? And I know if I keep on going, they're going to hurt more. But when you get into deep meditation, 4 or 5 hours, and everything is just so relaxed. It was weird. But then I started to investigate that weird phenomena, because other things started to happen when you got into deep meditation. You know, like things like diseases disappeared. And you started to realize that in these deep meditations, when you really let go of the body and stop controlling it all the time, you get amazing health benefits. Basically, when you get out of the way, your body balances and heals itself much better than you can ever do it. And I've seen that many times. Even when I haven't totally, well, it is getting out of the way. I told a few people, these are some of the benefits of meditation, the weird stuff which happens. I told a few people having some physical problems about the story about 18 months ago, or 16 months ago, when over in Bodhinyana Monastery, many of the monks had food poisoning. Now, it's what we call an occupational hazard, being a monk. People bring all the food to us. We don't know what they're bringing. We don't know what they put into it. And sometimes there's always the opportunity and chance they put in something which, you know, shouldn't be there. Or they cooked it at home last night and they bring it here. And something's gone off. So it's not the same as you guys, because you know, usually eat fresh food. You know, you cook it and you eat it straight away. The way that we eat, you know, is sometimes a little bit unhealthy. But it doesn't matter. We have our meditation to balance everything and make it incredibly healthy. So what actually happened, I had this terrible food poisoning. And instead of going to the doctor, I was up in the cave, just on the ground. I couldn't really sit because it was just hurting too much. Trying to relax, but you know what happens. You start rolling around, just holding your tummy because it has spasms of pain. But I'm a very stupid monk sometimes, but I do get my moments of insight. My moment of insight was, what would I teach other people to do? Come on, Ajahn Brahm, you're a teacher. And I said, I know what I'd teach. I should have done this hours ago. You know, sometimes you're really stupid. It's very easy to teach others, but to teach yourself, sometimes you forget. So maybe because I'm getting old, maybe this is the start of Alzheimer's disease. I was telling a few people, I had this other joke. You know, I told some Alzheimer's disease jokes the other day. You know, my favourite Alzheimer's joke is a brilliant one, but I forgot it. Anyway, so what I did, was just put all my mindfulness on that, instead of trying to run away from it and control it. Because that's what you were trying to do, trying to control it, get rid of the pain. So instead, all your mindfulness, totally accept it, and then give it the kindness. The mindfulness plus kindness technique. And it was, you know, it's brilliant what happens. It took 20 minutes, that's all. 20 minutes, and all the spasms, the pain had gone. That was the end of the food poisoning. And I don't mind saying, it's not psychic powers, it's just what happens. It's just nature. And even at the time, I mean, I said, wow, that's amazing. But they say, yeah, I know. How many times have you done that? I know it works, but sometimes you just forget. But every time it really amazes you what this mind can do. It's weird stuff, but it works. A little bit of mindfulness and kindness. If you do it properly, you've got to do it 100%. If you're being mindful and kind, because this is what sometimes happened afterwards. I told a few people this, and they said, I tried it and it didn't work. What do you mean it didn't work? Were you doing it, trying to make it work? That's not being kind. You're just using this as another method to get rid of the pain. That's not what I meant. When it's kind, open the door of your heart to that feeling. Unconditionally, you can stay for the rest of your life, or my life, or anyone's life. I can be with that pain forever. I totally open the door of my heart to you, no conditions at all. Now that's what works. But if you say, I will open the door of my heart to you, as long as you go in 10 minutes, then of course that is not unconditional, is it? So you do that, and it's amazing what happens when you don't control, when you don't expect anything, when you don't try and make things happen. When just like Ajahn Chah, you sit under the tree with your hand open and the solution to the problem just falls. The thing vanishes and disappears. That's weird, but that's exactly what you learn in this meditation technique here. How just to watch, open the door of your mind, your heart, to whatever's happening unconditionally. It's amazing how the pain totally vanishes. It's weird, but it's really full of insight. I realized, again, that's how you overcome these terrible pains of life. Not just physical ones, but emotional ones as well. Exactly the same technique. I'm a hopeless meditator. I can't get anywhere on this retreat. I'm going to ask for my money back. More than that, I'm going to get my lawyer to sue Ajahn Brahm. He promised I'll get jhanas and all these enlightenments. You know, it's fraud. That's what it is, fraud. I'm going to sue him and the Buddhist Society and everybody else. But instead of doing that, you just open the door of your heart to the pain of failure. Failure, come in. I just love you, failure. I'm at peace with failure. Unconditional love for being a hopeless meditator. And if you do that, I guarantee jhanas. Because that actually works. It's this trick, if you like, the ability to let go, not control, just open the door of your heart, pull your hand out, open without sort of shaking the tree. Another, what's the other one about the donkey not chasing the carrot but staying still? All the stories, all teaching the same thing. And the thing is, this happens, it's the weird stuff which happens in your body. The other thing which sometimes happens, which I have to tell at every retreat because sometimes this occurs very commonly, and it sometimes freaks people out because it's weird. Sometimes when you meditate, you get hot spots in your body. I mean, really hot. And sometimes people say, even already somebody told me during the interview, and they thought they were just in the sun. They were outside sitting on the stupa. They thought it was the sun. But then when they came out of meditation, the sun had either gone in behind the clouds or behind one of the buildings. It wasn't the sun. But they were very hot. Ah, what's going on? What happens? This is natural. It's brilliant. When you stop controlling, when you let go of your body, when you're just watching the breath go in and out, peaceful as anything, nice and happy and content, so you're not interfering. The happiness and contentment means you don't have to do anything. You're having a good time. You're letting go of the body. And then parts of the body get hot. Of course, when that first happened to me and when it started happening to others, it was weird, but you soon found out what was occurring was the body's natural way of healing. When the energy of the body goes to a part which really needs some healing, some repair, of course, all that energy going together in one place, it feels hot. That's just how you experience it. And a lot of the time that happens, I didn't do anything, why is that hot? And the reason is because some great healing is happening there. But that will only happen if you totally let go. If you have some problem, some heart disease, some cancer, some problem anywhere in your body, and say, I'm going to meditate because I have to heal this. Of course, it never happens. That's too much control. But if you totally let go and relax, that's what happens. A classic case was on one of these retreats which I gave many, many years ago in Sydney. There was a lot of complaints when it came to question time about one meditator. If you think the meditators here are noisy, this guy was the Guinness Book of Records noisiest meditator I've ever known. Because every time he would come and meditate, just like that, yeah. He couldn't even breathe without making a loud noise. And the reason was because he had a carcinoma in his nose. He was dying of nasal cancer. And that's why he came to tell me. He said, this is his last roll of the dice. He'd been through chemotherapy, he'd been through radiation therapy and surgery, but the tumour kept on growing, and the doctors gave up on him. And he said he heard that meditation can sometimes do some good things for you, so he just decided to give it a try. He was dying, and that's why he just had to breathe loudly. It was actually wonderful. I had all these questions after 2 or 3 days. Can't you tell people to breathe quietly? And then when I told him this guy is dying of cancer, there was no more complaints. Remember, people make noise. There's some reason behind it. So don't have anger or ill will. It can be somebody dying of some terrible cancer. That's why they keep shuffling into the room and banging the doors. Who knows why they do that? But there's always a reason. So be kind to people. So of course, people were so kind to this guy once I announced he was dying of cancer. But just before, one of the reasons I allow people to have an interview the last day, because the last day, just before he left, he had to come and see me to have an interview. Because he said a strange thing happened. You know, he'd been breathing through his mouth sort of all those 9 days. And suddenly, the last morning, he was meditating, you know, given up all hope because nothing could work. It usually happens on the last day because that's the time you give up. You stop controlling. It hasn't worked so far, so it's not going to work now. Brilliant. So, he heard a pop. I remember this because somebody said they heard a pop in their head the other day. He heard a pop, and suddenly he could breathe. It was like a miracle, but only for about a minute or two. He could breathe through his nose. He heard that pop, and obviously the tumour had contracted for no discernible cause. And he could breathe through his nose, but then it closed up again. And he had to breathe through his mouth. But such a weird experience, he had to tell it to me. And when he told me, that, quite honestly, I thought, you've left it too late. If you only did this, you know, a few months earlier, you may have a chance of living. And I, you know, just gave him a blessing, carry on, but I really thought he'd gone. He was too late. And of course, these stories always have nice endings, because a few years later, I was teaching in Sydney. And this guy came up to me and said, do you remember me? Please don't ask me that. There's thousands of you. And I'm getting old. I've got Alzheimer's, okay? So chances of remembering you are just going to get less and less and less and less. That's why, you know, you got that answer the other day I told you, that if people ask you that, I said, oh yeah, you're that person whose name I keep forgetting. that's a very good way out of being embarrassed. So I said, I don't know, who are you? And he said, I was that guy. And he said, I carried on meditating, the tumour totally disappeared, and now I'm spending the rest of my life teaching other people how to do your meditation. And that was a really wonderful story. And there's many stories like that. It's amazing just when you really let go, when you stop shaking the tree, how many mangoes fall. And you feel that sometimes. You get so relaxed, so peaceful. You feel hot spots in your body. You feel channels opening up in your body and great healing happening. That's weird, but you experience that. Now that's the place where you can get great insight. Practical insights, maybe not enlightenment, but at least how to have a healthy body. Stop controlling it so much. Stop making it so tense it can't heal itself. It's an amazing thing, this body. Give it a chance and it will do what it needs to do. I used to notice that wild animals, whenever they got bitten by a snake or whenever they got some sickness, they just crawled under a bush. I remember in one place, under the monk's hut, they just lie down there and really relax. And either they're going to die or they're going to get well, but the best way of doing it is just to relax to the max and allowing the body to do what it needs to do to heal. So by doing that, you just get so still, so peaceful. A lot of times you feel heat going in your body, And that heat is a good sign. Yeah, you're letting go. Don't get afraid. Just let it happen. It's the body healing itself. Sometimes you feel the weird stuff going on in the body, twisting around or jerking, whatever it is. This is weird stuff. Why did this happen? I didn't do this. This is just the body doing what it needs to do to release energy, to allow energy to flow, whatever it is. And if that happens, please don't interfere. Please don't get afraid. Think, this is strange. What's happening? And just spoil it. Just let it happen. It's the weird stuff. But it only happens when you let go. That's why the weird stuff is a sign that you're meditating properly. It's a sign that things are occurring, that insight is about to come, and also good health. So especially, you know, when you get to the very deep meditation, I mean, that is incredibly weird. The weirdest things in the whole world are these jhanas. Even limiters are weird. How can you see anything that bright in the middle of the night? How can it be just so brilliant and you don't go blind? How can it be so, like someone said, a fireball and you don't get burnt? Weird stuff. But if you are not allowed to see the weird, if you're such a control freak, you'll be afraid of those limiters and you'll push them away. No, it's too weird for me. So please, be a fan of the weird, like me. Anything strange, I'm interested in. Look, there's some other little stories and anecdotes. I remember this couple. Now, this is an old story, some of you have heard this one. There was a couple who came to see me once from, I forget what suburb they were in. They're, you know, Australian couple. They're a young couple with two kids. It's a Peter and Paul story. These Australian couple, they weren't Buddhist, they were just an ordinary young couple, had two children. And their young, well, the oldest child was about two or three, maybe three. The oldest child, the youngest one, had just been born, and the mother had just returned from hospital just for a few days. And it was the evening time, and the mother told her older child, 3 years old, it's time to go to bed. Go and say good night to your baby brother. So the elder brother Paul went over to the little cot or little bed, whatever it's called, where his little baby brother Peter was lying down, and just leant over and said, "Good night, Peter." And then Peter said, "Good night, Paul." And he was only about, you know, a few weeks old. That was weird. So weird that the parents stopped what they were doing and just stared in disbelief. And they said they didn't prompt their older son. He did it by himself. He said again, "Good night, Peter." And this time they were looking with full mindfulness together, two of them. And their little baby, a few weeks old, said once again, "Good night, Paul." That freaked them out, as you'd imagine. And so it's interesting that they don't go to the Catholic Church, they don't go to the doctor, they don't go to anyone, they come to the Buddhist monks. Because they know that we understand the weird stuff of life. You go to other people, they'd be in counselling or in therapy, or they take the kids away because, you know, you're not fit parents, you're weird. I don't know, maybe they don't do that. But you get the point of what I'm saying. But they came to us and said, "What's going on?" I said, "Well, it's obvious, you know, your baby talked." "It's not supposed to." "Yeah, it does. You know, even our Buddha, he taught when he was a baby. Seven steps, I'm the best, this is my last life." But it happens, it's weird. But why is it? Because it's weird and it's not supposed to happen. Why do people think, "No, I must have just imagined that"? Why is it we're not open to the weird part of life? You can understand that is why we don't get insights. We just refuse to believe the impossible until the impossible is seen to be actually the possible and the truth. Strange, but absolutely true. So obviously people get reborn and they can do that. I can't resist the favourite story of all. This was actually reported in a sort of medical journal. It was in a maternity ward in the United States. And in front of the gynecologist, the doctor or whatever it was, the medic, delivering the baby and all the midwives, the baby just came out, you know, of the womb, you know, with all the guck on it, still attached to the umbilical cord, and looked around and said the words in front of everybody, spoke just a few minutes outside from the womb. The memorable words, "Oh no, not again." That's a Buddhist monk. That's a classic. That's a wise person. That's something, "Oh no, not again." Getting born again. Oh boy, what have I done? This sucks. And I tell that to some people, say, "No, it couldn't have happened." Don't imagine it. It's just a joke. It's April Fool's joke or something. No, these are real things. They happen. So when you start to get used to the weird because it happens in your meditation, some of these stories which you deny, even some of the experiences you have in your meditation, you start to take them seriously. Yeah, they're upsetting the way you normally look at life. But it's important to have that upset, to see things in a truthful way, rather than just a comfortable, culturally comfortable way. You see things in a new way. And of course you have to have that acceptance of the weird and the strange, so that when we really do get into some deep meditations, and your sense of self vanishes, the will disappears, things which should always be there are no longer there, then you can accept it. You're not going crazy. You're seeing the truth. Because this is one thing which happens. I did, talking about the insights yesterday, I only really talked yesterday about anatta and dukkha. Now, anatta, especially about the will and the consciousness vanishing. Talking about the idea of consciousness being this fruit salad, one thing after another, but because the coconut always follows each other fruit, it gives a semblance, an illusion of continuity, and it's just really particular. And I mentioned about suffering, especially seeing past lives, and seeing just a whole range of experience, and that really gives another perspective on that teaching of suffering. But I never really went into anicca. One of the reasons is because people understand anicca, they think they do, which means it doesn't really challenge them enough, it's just too comfortable. But the simile which I love giving is, I gave a simile of a TV set, but I sometimes change that to the simile of the lake. You can go and see the lake down below, and you see the ripples on the lake. If it's a windy day, they're almost waves. The rise and fall, the rise and fall of phenomena. Yeah, you can see that. You know, sound comes and then vanishes. An itch on your nose and then it's gone. You know, sort of the food here is very, very impermanent, especially when I eat it. It doesn't last very long in my plate. So, and then it's gone. So those are the easy things to see as impermanent. That is just like the sitting by the lake and seeing the waves come and go. That's the simple stuff. That's what we call superficial anicca. But then you're sitting by that lake and one day the lake vanishes. Just like I said, the wall starts to melt. White towels become black and then they become white again. Your body explodes. It's not supposed to do that. That's weird, but it's real. And you see the lake vanish. It's gone. There's no water anymore. Not even any earth which once held that lake. No sky above. No trees around. It's all gone. And it's not supposed to go. That's culturally impossible. That is anicca. It totally throws you. Sometimes you think you're crazy, but it's just too strong. It's just too true, too real. This is what challenges
our usual ways of looking at life. Remember, enlightenment is not seeing the obvious, it's seeing what's hidden for most people. Not really hidden, they hide it from themselves because they don't want to see it. These are those great moments when things which were always there, which you thought were solid and real, things which you thought you could rely upon, are taken away from you. They're not solid after all. They're anicca, subject to disappearing, cessation, vanishing. Woo! It's scary when you think about it, but it's so freeing afterwards. Just like going to the dentist. Scary beforehand, a great relief when the toothache is gone afterwards. That's why it does take courageous people. People who can accept the weird. People who who can really be interested in weird stuff and can investigate it, incorporate it, and see, my goodness, kids do speak when they are freshly born. There are these kids who can just play sort of whole symphonies when they have never been taught music and they're only just really, really young. Some weird stuff in this world, but it's true. You better accept it. It challenges you. That's the only way to see the truth, to gain insight. So when any weird stuff happens, please accept it. Embrace it and come and tell me about it, because I need more material for my talks. Because insight is weird and strange. And you know it's real insight, because sometimes, how do you know you're just not going crazy? You mean you really are going really mad, I mean properly mad, you know, clinically mad. And the great test is, if it really is legitimate insight, it makes you feel so peaceful and happy afterwards. It liberates. Because sometimes people come up and have all sorts of weird insights, and they say some very strange things. And to me, you know, they ask me, is it real insight? Am I lying? What's happening? And the way you find out is not about the power of the insight or its profundity or what it sounds like or how much it explains. It's how it changes you. Are you a more peaceful person? Are you a more happy person? Are you more imperturbable? When somebody crashes your car, do you say, oh, it's just impermanent, it didn't belong to me anyway? Or do you say, stupid wife, I only go away for 9 days and now you go and crash my car? Don't you know how hard it is to work to get a car these days and how we can't afford it? Then you're obviously not enlightened. Oh, your insight is just totally superficial. But this happened to one of the disciples, and he told me this is a classic story and very beautiful. You know, he'd been meditating a long time, and you know, he really thought he'd let go of his attachments. And he would actually travel from place to place. You know, that's why he came and stayed with us a long time. And he stayed at Nolamara for a while, and he was the only thing he had in his life. The only possession which was worth something was his Harley Davidson motorbike. This beautiful Harley. And those bikes are sometimes are worth more, no, actually usually much more than a car. And that's $70,000-$80,000 I think that was worth, and that was quite a long time ago. And he told me, he was over in Sydney, and he told me that he was the one who told me this other interesting story, another weird story. You know the story about how, okay, you don't mind a few weird stories, this is stories about heavenly beings. You know, really weird. Do heavenly beings, do angels exist? Yeah, they do. Because this story began with one of the famous Thai monks. This is Lumpu Chop. That was when he went to Burma during the Second World War just to meditate. Because in those days, the monks would wander all over Southeast Asia. It didn't matter what sort of nationality you were. There's no passports. You know, you just wandered. And any monastery was your hotel, your home. So he was in Burma in the Second World War, but at that time, I think the Japanese invaded Thailand, or rather Thailand gave in, and so that Thailand was, you know, an ally of Japan, and this was a Thai monk, and the British were in Burma, so any Thais were like enemies, and they thought, British soldiers thought the Thai monks were spies. And so the British actually would kill those monks sometimes, interrogate them, do all sorts of nasty things to them. So it was very dangerous to be a Thai monk in Burma during the Second World War. And so they told this Thai monk, you better get out before, you know, something bad happens. But you can't go on the normal roads because the British soldiers are there. They'll sort of catch you. And we can't guarantee your safety. So the only way to get back to safety in Thailand is to go through the jungles, on the old jungle paths. So off he went. He was a forest monk. Off he went walking, you know, from Burma into Thailand. Now that was about a month's walk or something. Really a long way. And sort of, there's no sort of villages or places in between. And I remember that area, because I've been in that area before. Those mountains, they're vertical. I mean, it's really, really tough work going up and down these mountains. And so that he had been walking for days, and he said he hadn't seen any village at all, and being a monk, you can't carry food with you. And he was starving. I mean, really badly malnourished, that he thought he's not going to make it. And so he made a resolution. He said, I'm a good monk. I keep my rules, and I'm a meditator. I'm trying to do the best as a monk. And he said, I remember that sometimes in the suttas, heavenly beings would help monks. He said, if there are any heavenly beings, may they help me, because I'm a good monk. And he made that resolution out of desperation. A quarter of an hour later, in the middle of absolutely nowhere, in the jungle, he turned a corner and there was a man waiting for him on the side of the path with one of these tiffin cans, you know, bintos in Thailand. You know, three or four metal containers, the bottom one with rice and the other one with curries and some sweets. And this man was just standing there waiting for this monk. And he just put his hands up to the monk, which is, you know, inviting him to take some food. The monk opened his bowl, and this being put this food in the monk's bowl. Not jungle food. Jungle food is usually potatoes, because there's no rice up in the jungles. Potatoes and just usually wild animal flesh, because that's all they have to eat. This was Bangkok food. Really nice food. And also, it was hot. There wasn't a village for days' walk in any direction. And this guy was not dressed in rags. He was finely dressed like some royalty. Now, this is a true story. And the monk couldn't help but ask. He's not supposed to ask. He said, where are you from? And all the monk, all this man would do, he never said a word throughout this whole thing. He pointed upwards. It was obviously, it was a deva fed a good monk. Because there's no other explanation at all. There's middle of the jungle, hot food, you know, delicious food. You know, not the food, I know those jungles. You don't get nice food in the jungles. And just well dressed. How did he know this monk was coming anyway? So it was a deva helped him. Now you go to more recent, about 33 years ago, I was wandering through northeast Thailand, through Phupan. And in those days, it wasn't developed yet. There was, you know, very few villages. I was doing my tudong, walking through the jungles. I had a good meal that day, but I was really thirsty. And it was very hot. And I hadn't seen a village or a well or a river for so many hours. I was really desperately thirsty. Actually, the next day I actually did get, heat stroke. But that day I was very, very thirsty. And I came to like a ridge in the mountains. And in the valley I could see a small village. First village I'd seen for many hours. And I knew in that village, in all villages in that time and time, there'd be one shop which sold everything, like a general store. And they would sell kerosene for people's lamps, cigarettes, of course, you know, sugar, and Coca-Cola. Or was it Pepsi? I think it was Pepsi's. They'd always have that. So I made my resolution. I am a good monk. I keep my Vinaya. If there are devas, if there are heavenly beings, give us a Pepsi. And I actually did that. I said that because, number one, I needed it. And it was true. I was keeping all my rules very well. I was a good monk. And I really wanted, this is a good time to test out whether these devas are real or not. Because I remember the story of Ajahn Chah. So I walked out into that village, very calm, very mindful, looking in front of me, not looking to the left or the right, a good monk. And I could see in the corner of my eye, I passed the general store. No one invited me in to stop. And I thought, never mind, it was worth a try. There are no devas. And as soon as that thought came out of my mind, I heard somebody running behind me. Nimon crap. And you know the Suvadi and Dirayupa, you know what that means. That means an invitation, Nimon. And I turned around and there was a person with an open Pepsi Cola for me. Now that could have been just coincidence. But then another man came out with another open Pepsi Cola. And then another, and 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 another. There was an old wooden bench outside. I sat down and I lined up 9 Pepsi Colas, one after the other, all opened. And of course, you know in Thai, what is the magic number in Thai?
9.
It's a magic number. If I had done that in Singapore, I'd have got 8 Pepsi Colas, because 8 is the And 9 Pepsi Colas, I couldn't believe it. These devas, yes, they do exist, and they want you to know they exist. By making sure I had 9. It was a really amazing experience. I just took a little bit of each and gave the rest to the kids. But this one man I was talking about with is Harley Davidson. I told him that story. He said, it's amazing. He was hiking in the wilderness areas of New South Wales. If ever you've been in those wilderness areas of New South Wales, they are just real wilderness. No one is there. Sometimes people get lost and they die. They have to be rescued by helicopters and stuff. No one's around there. He was really thirsty. He remembered my story. And he said, oh, if this day was, can I have something to drink? And he absolutely swears this is true. He turned a corner in the path. This was the middle of the bush, the real deep bush in New South Wales. And there was an opened packet of orange juice. You know these little orange juice packages which you have? He was just lying, standing on a rock there, waiting for him. He said, the most amazing thing, it was chilled. You know how hot Australia is? This was like it had just come out of the refrigerator. And he thought, this is incredibly weird. And there's no answer gone on it yet. So if you leave anything out there, you just get some orange juice and put it out in the bush over here. And 5 minutes will be covered in ants. I think that's what Bianca did the other day. She put some watermelon out for one of the lizards. And I caught her. She was, what are you doing? She said, covered in ants. So I had to throw it away. No ants, chilled, just waiting for him. And it's totally in the wilderness area. No one for miles. How on earth did that come there? If it was somebody traveling, he could see them. He could see for miles ahead. That could have just been put there a second or 2 seconds before because it was perfectly cold. Just the right temperature. So he drank it. That's very nice. Thank you. Weird stuff happens. So it was he was the guy, going back to his Harley Davidson. He was the guy who's obviously got some good karma. So he was in some shopping centre in Melbourne or Sydney. He parked his Harley, went to do his shopping. When he came back, his Harley had been stolen. The one thing in his life which was valuable, which he liked, his most cherished possession, somebody had stolen it. He wrote to me about this afterwards, and he said, straight away, he let it go. He wasn't at all upset. It's anicca, these things come, these things go. He really was a wise Buddhist. And he said he felt so wonderful that the thing he loved most in this world, he could let it go so easily. Now, this Buddhism had actually done a great thing for him. And he felt so good, so almost proud, that, as a Buddhist, it worked. He had no anger towards the thief, no remorse at all that he'd stolen. He wasn't upset. And he was just going to walk away when he noticed he was on the wrong floor of the car park. Yes. And of course, when he went on the correct floor, there was his car, his Stout Harley, and untouched. So he won both ways there. He got tested, and he passed the test, and he still had his Harley afterwards. So that's actually what happens to you. Those things in life, they really teach you. And that's what anicca is. If the most cherished thing in your life, suddenly you lose it. Anicca, that's all. Your mother dies. Your son dies. Anicca. They come, as they say in the suttas, they come without invitation. They leave without taking leave. That's the nature of life and death. They come into your life where they come from, sometimes uninvited, unplanned. And they leave unbidden. That's life. That's anicca. You understand that, you get so peaceful and free. That's how you understand that you've got wisdom. Not by whether you can write books about wisdom or you can give great speeches. That's not a test of your insight. Whether it leads to peace, freedom, and happiness. That's weird, but it's true. So that's the talk today on weirdness. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good.